Welcome to the Pitt Rivers Museum's Matters of Policy podcast. This is a podcast in which we explore the museum's collections development policy, speaking with guests from across the globe to delve into the language used and consider what really matters in this policy. Hi, and welcome to the final episode of the Matters of Policy podcast with the Pitt Rivers Museum. I'm Bessie, and I'm joined today by Yip and Megan, and we're just going to conclude with a little bit of a discussion about what we've learned and talk about some of the topics that we each think have been really interesting that have come up throughout the podcast and the discussions that we've had with each of our guests. So yeah, we've had 11 guests in total over the course of the 12 episodes. We've also done a workshop and looked in depth about the collections policy. Yeah, I think personally, it's just been a really big learning curve to look at a policy in such depth, especially in terms of the language used throughout the policy, which I wouldn't have felt going into it would have reflected the Pitt Rivers Museum, and obviously doesn't really reflect it so much with the kind of updated strategic plan. But having a policy like that that's open, you know, it's public access, that has such outdated language was quite shocking. And so it's been really good to have the opportunity to look at this further and also discuss it with you guys.
Yeah, as we learned, particularly in our workshop, it is really difficult to get changes to policy through. So a lot of museums will simply change their practice, which is fantastic. And of course, practice is one of the most important things that needs to change because that's where the work actually happens. But if a policy changes, then everyone in the institution can get behind the practice that they want to commit to. And we think particularly for the Pitt Rivers, as it is such a leader in museum decolonization, it's really important to have a policy that accurately reflects their new values and the direction that they want to take. So it was really interesting to learn not just about the barriers to changing policies, but from our guests, the ways that this policy could be changed radically in order to sort of help not only the Pitt Rivers, but everyone who might want to follow the Pitt Rivers to make their museums better places.
And I think also we've been really sort of captivated by the question, what comes first, like policy or practice? But that's maybe a bit of like a chicken and egg problem, whilst they sort of naturally develop simultaneously or organically. So perhaps the duality here is a bit of a fallacy. But I do think what we've learned is that this is such a new field of work, the decolonization work. So a bit of trial and error is allowed. Practice is allowed to run a bit ahead, but you should never... Policy should never sort of fall out of sight, for that could be dangerous.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And that kind of leads perfectly into our first topic, which was the idea of policy and practice. And I think as we kind of discussed in a number of the episodes with our guests, specifically, I know that came up in the episode that I was speaking with Joel and Edenshaw about the idea about policy reflecting these old wording and these old ideologies and language, and it being the last thing to change rather than, you know, it's not policy leading the way. But I think, as Gina and Jan said, it should be policy to lead the way, because how else are you going to have everybody being on the same page? It needs to be clear what your organizational goals are, and if the policy is needed for the accreditation and the accreditation is needed for the funding, then surely it should be the policy that should come first in order for every single fund that comes through the museum to be in line with the policy and in line with the collections development policy and the accessibility policy, to create this, you know, a uniformed body that has clear goals. So it's great that the practice would work and be really forward thinking, but if the accreditation body doesn't see the museum as enacting those changes, then it could be seen as kind of just saying you're doing something, but you're not, even though you are actually doing something. I mean, it's definitely easier to kind of change from the ground up in terms of implementing practice before getting longer, tangible changes. But I do think that a review of policy maybe needs to be in place more frequently. I need to go into more detail, like we've done now, which is something that was, you know, maybe not done in previous years, to assure that it does align with the museum's goals and that we a reflecting language that is used in the policy, such as the collections policy, to make sure that it doesn't reinforce some of the outdated power balances that the practice in the museum is really, really striving forward to address. But again, if it's in the policy and it is in the organizational goals, then it still reinforces it. You can do it as much as you want, but if that's the motto that the museum is presenting, then is it ever going to be an equal power balance? Yeah, so I think that was the main thing that really came up for me, was this policy and practice dichotomy, which is going to have to be, you know, explored further and further in multiple policies, multiple practices. I'm going to pass over to Megan. What was your kind of number one area that you wanted to explore and that had come up for you?
If listeners have been hearing me talk at all, then they'll know that repatriation is one of my biggest scholarly interests, as well as one of the main reasons that I wanted to come to work at the Pitt Rivers, because the way that I was introduced to Marenka was in an article in Winnipeg in the Associated Press that talked about the removal of the Sansas and their perhaps eventual repatriation. And I emailed Marenka and we talked about it a lot. And that led me, of course, to this podcast. So repatriation occupies a very small space in the policy, which is perhaps not surprising since it really hasn't been much of a draw to public interest or museum interest until very recently. And I think that's kind of a crime, because repatriation is what the future of museums will be all about. And whether this is physical repatriation, epistemic or emotional repatriation, it doesn't really matter, because the future of museums will be about creating good relationships between institutions and communities. And you can't really do that if there's a huge power imbalance of, hey, we have all your stuff and we took it by violence on one side. So like Solomon Enos talked about, the reason that we're all here is because there can be really great partnerships between museums and communities. I definitely still have hope in that sense. I wouldn't be here if I didn't. But I think a lot of inner work needs to be done on the museum side to further those relationships. And a really big part of that inner work is going to be not just examining our practice, because I know that the Pitt Rivers is invested in some epistemic and physical repatriation practices, but also making good on their promise to communities to further their relationships with them emotionally, and to ensure that they have the community's best interests at heart, not just in practice, but in policy as well. And I know that repatriation is also a hugely nuanced issue. We talked about this a lot in our workshop with the Pitt River staff, who really explained it to us in fantastic terms. There's a lot of different ways that repatriation can be done. There might be cultures and some people who don't really want their stuff back, who don't really care if the Pitt Rivers has it or not. But the dialogue still needs to happen. It still needs to be initiated. And there will be many more cultures who really do want their stuff back. And if museums want to create good relationships with those people, then they need to listen to those requests. And everything really does need to be taken on a case-by-case basis, which is why interpersonal relationships are just so important. And even so, like Carrie Newman talked about with the witness blanket, there's ways that artifacts can be shown in museums with the consent of communities and with no actual ownership on the part of museums, new partnerships and alliances that can be formed in ways that don't necessarily involve bills of ownership or money or, you know, anything sort of that Western-based museums have been pushing for thus far. We can do things a different way where communities and museums are both happy and artifacts are cared for in a way that is culturally relevant and significant. And on a very practical level, at some point, there is going to be legislation regarding colonial repatriation. I believe that some guidelines are even now in the works to create such a thing in the UK. Not sure about Canada yet, but we're getting there. Public sentiment has really put this issue into the spotlight. So if the Pitt Rivers can institute a solid repatriation policy when they rewrite their policy next summer, that might make things a lot easier, and it'll make them a leader, as you know they already are, in the field of museum decolonization. And I think repatriation is going to be one of the things that really sets the Pitt Rivers apart in terms of creating relationships with communities and remaining a global leader in museum decolonization.
I think it's really interesting, just reflecting that both the policy and practice, you know, that I've discussed, and also the repatriation that you've discussed, Megan, it comes down to the power balance as well. Like it's very interesting that that is at the core of it, and addressing that in the museum is and should be at the forefront of the decisions that they were making going forward with policymaking in the cultural heritage sector. What about you, Yip? What did you think was the kind of top theme?
Yeah, I think what Megan just mentioned about expanding the definition of repatriation is going to be really important for the future. Because when we talk about concrete steps in rewriting the CDP, this is definitely something that will have to be explored more. I do think the current section on repatriation in the CDP is limited because it only focuses on physical repatriation of objects and human remains. So a next step will be expanding this notion, also including guidelines on policy around things as emotional and spiritual, as well as digital repatriation. Then what stood out to me most during this podcast series were the many conversations we had around barriers from within and without when we talk about changing policy, and policy and practice, I should say. Because what surprised me, or perhaps what I had not anticipated, is that the barriers towards implementing changes are mainly barriers from within the museum and not so much from without. Because many of the interviewees mentioned the problem of limited staffing. This decolonization project is just so big, it's overturning an entire worldview. So naturally, that just requires a lot of research and work and does also time, which is difficult to accept sometimes, but that's the reality we're facing here. And then on top of that, the issue of limited space came up. I think there are these great ambitions to make changes within the museum space, but the Pitt Rivers is running out of physical space to tell particular stories. The museum is so full that sometimes tough decisions need to be made on what can be done within the space. But as, for example, Faye has mentioned, digitization could play an important role here, although digitization too has its own barriers that need to be investigated, particularly around access. And then a final barrier mentioned was limited funding. So as the Pitt Rivers is a non-national university museum operating within the framework of the University of Oxford, it is tied to sometimes very specific and extensive procedures to get resources. And then at the same time, it's also included from a lot of the resources that are made available to national museums. And this funding issue is, of course, already tied to barriers from without. But when we talked about external barriers amongst ourselves prior to the podcast series, we were talking more about external parties like the Arts Council. And as we've heard, the Arts Council are in fact really taking responsibility in rethinking the museum's role. And they are leading the way and helping to improve policy. So what can then be concluded is indeed that a lot of focus will have to be on the internal issues. And some solutions that came up are working more closely with other museums via things as co-curatorship or with community curators and with artists that stand close to stakeholder communities. Still, this all will take a long time. There's no denying. Change is slow, but truly steps. We could be able to speed it up in the future, or we should be able to speed it up in the future. And what's also been mentioned is that slow but well-considered change tends to have more endurance, which I guess is the positive side to this all.
Yeah, I think that's a really positive note to end it on. That it's going to take a very long time, but I think, yeah, as you said, like that slow change tends to have endurance, and that is what we should be aiming to do, is to make changes that do last for multiple generations to come, and also employ practices like reevaluating the policy, like we've done with this podcast, that practice of reevaluation is also something that should be done in the future. And paving the way for that is very important.
Yeah, and to give just a little bit of extra hope, I think we're also living in an extremely transformative time for museums and museum professionals. There's a whole lot of public interest in anti-racism, in decolonial theory, and in holding museums accountable. So it's a really interesting time, not only to be working in museums, but to be just entering the field, as the four of us in the intern squad are. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens when we finally get jobs and enter the workforce. And I know from my studies at the U of T that a lot of the people who I am working with and being in school with right now are really interested in the same things that we are, in making sure that museums change positively. So if you, everyone out there is looking for faster change, I think it is coming. I think that we are creating a workforce and a contingent of people who really want to see museums change, who really want to do good work. And the people who have been working in museums thus far, we owe them an enormous debt for taking us this far. But this is an extremely important moment in museum history. And I think that we're raising a group of museum professionals who are rising to meet it. I'm full of optimism, especially after doing this wonderful podcast.
Yeah, I think that's very, very hopeful. I really, really do hope that it implements some changes. Moving forward, we're going to release a report suggesting some of the more tangible changes that we have recognized in the collections development policy before it's rewritten for the new accreditation. And we'll also, not just us, but other members of the intern squad, we'll be looking at producing maybe some blog posts to go alongside to kind of reflect upon and more personal journeys and themes. So yeah, have a little look at the Pitt Rivers Museum's website for that. And yeah, thanks. I'm Bessie. I'm a master's student at the University of Glasgow. And yeah, if anyone wants to hire any of us. I don't know if I'm allowed to put that in there, but you know, please let us know.
I'm Megan Mann from the University of Toronto. I have enjoyed this podcast and getting to know the intern squad and our fantastic guests immensely. I am really looking forward to seeing where we go, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to get to learn alongside you guys and from our fantastic guests who gave up their time so willingly to talk to the intern squad about their experiences with decolonization in museums. And especially to Marenka, who has helped us all through this with the benevolent grace of a wonderful mother hen.
Thanks, Megan. And I'm Jip Orm, and I'm a master's student at Leiden University. Thank you very much, everyone. It's been great working on this podcast, especially during a global pandemic. It's been great to still connect with other parts of the world. I think like we've connected with almost all continents. Well, that's not true, but not on Antarctica for sure. But it's been great to stay connected, hear from other people, people working in different fields, artists, curators, staff members. I've really enjoyed it. So thanks to everyone who's been part of this podcast. And thanks to the listeners.
That was the Pitt Rivers Museum's Matters of Policy podcast, produced by Bessie Woodhouse, Jip Borm, Megan Mann, Alexis Boria, and Bobblehat Sound. Music by Jack Fawcett. Voiceover by Dougal Lott. A special thank you to Marenka Thompson-Odlam and the Knowledge Exchange.